It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Evening listener, you're listening to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. On tonight's edition, we invite you to leave behind your safe reality and descend with us into the frightening depths of the most terrifying imaginations with two audio adaptations of frightening fiction about damp discoveries and soul-wrecking searches. I'm your host, Paul J. McSorley, and tonight I'll be your guide as we traverse the dimly lit corridors of your darkest dreams. Joining us tonight to help bring to life the frightening fiction of Red Bad Andy and Mark Taus is Matthew Farigia, Heather Ordover, Jeff Sturdivant, and myself, Paul J. McSorley. Now, get your ticket ready, take your seat in our Theater of the Minds, and brace yourself. It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Our first tale this evening is written by Red Bad Andy and performed by Matthew Farigia, Heather Ordover, Jeff Sturdivant, and myself, Paul J. McSorley. In it, a mysterious leak plagues a man's rundown apartment, but as it grows louder and stranger, it unveils a terrifying secret. Now, without further ado, I present to you The Leak in Room 316.
I hear the dripping again. The constant drip, drip, drip of water. I blink my eyes open and try to focus to make sure I am not in another nightmare. It sounds like another leak. This one might be the last. The last time I will hear the leak before the horrible conclusion to this ordeal. The last time hearing that telltale noise before the true nature of that loathsome portal is revealed and whatever hideous dimension hiding on the other side breaks through completely, the sound growing louder. Each drop has an exaggerated tone. It sounds like small explosions all trying to collapse that ceiling and engulf me in the dark abyss that I have already once mistakenly glimpsed at. It just can't be real. It can't! It swallowed people up. The portal behind that damn leak. I don't know what to do or how I got to this point. Just a short while ago, my only problem would have been the water damage to my belongings. Indeed, such a mundane problem as a leak in the ceiling would just be a minor issue. Nothing to fear except the repair bill. Yet I'm afraid it is a bit beyond that now. I shouldn't have waited this long. I should have just left. Yet where could I have gone? Maybe I should have paid more attention to who I was talking to and what they were saying. Too late now, I suppose. I have been living in this apartment for close to 6 months. I had moved into this dingy complex, to a small studio apartment after I lost my job and had to find a part-time position at significantly less pay. I tried to stay optimistic, but even before the terrible reality of what I was stepping into was clear, I was still on hard times. I could barely afford this decrepit room as it was, and I had no family or friends to speak of that I might be able to move in with, so my options were essentially non-existent. Considering my dire situation, I found the cheapest accommodation I could, and what I found was my home and hell for the last 6 months. Number 316 at the Greenfield Heights apartment complex. The amenities included paper-thin walls to hear all the drug deals gone wrong, domestic violence, and constant sirens of emergency vehicles blaring from all sorts of incidents. Topped off with a nice turndown service of package and mail theft to boot. All of these problems, though, feel small compared to the true horror of what the place had in store for me. It wasn't exactly a paradise, but I had to find the cheapest place I could. I was barely making a fraction of what I was before at my old job, and I needed somewhere to get back on my feet. I told myself it was temporary, and once I could get a better job, I would get out there. When I had first arrived to look at the place, I had arranged a walkthrough with the landlord, Mr. Jacobs. A very unpleasant fellow who always looked perpetually angry and was constantly shouting in the halls and at the few miserable-looking staff who worked here. We walked up two flights of stairs, passing a wall of profanity-laden graffiti tagged along almost the whole length of it leading up to where my future home was to be. Mr. Jacobs opened the door and the rattling handle nearly fell off in the effort. We stepped inside and the dank room stank like a tomb. The tiny apartment was depressing, and when he went to turn on the main light, nothing happened. He scoffed and muttered a string of colorful language and grumbled that,
"Someone will bring a new light bulb. I told Rodney to check that earlier, that lazy piece of shit."
I didn't want to press the matter since he looked pissed off, so we went in, and he showed me what little there was to see of the tiny apartment. We had to rely on the dim light of the bedroom to see elsewhere, since the main light was out. Despite leading the walkthrough, it looked like Mr. Jacobs was distracted. He was looking at the ceiling in the corner of the tiny living room with a concerned grimace on his face. He stared at it for a while and paused the tour. I found it a little weird. He finally looked back at me as if noticing that I was watching him stare at the ceiling, and he shrugged and asserted that,
"You're going to want to get some buckets. When it rains heavily, that part of the ceiling leaks. Can't seem to find out how, since there's no leak on 416 above, but bad luck on this one, I guess. That's the only reason the price is so low."
He shot me a grin that I could only describe as enthusiastically malicious. After the brief walkthrough, Mr. Jacobs turned around and asked very bluntly,
"You are not a troublemaker, are you?"
His eyes narrowed and he looked very threatening suddenly. I assured him of my earnest intent and need for a place to stay, and he softened briefly. At least I think he did. It was hard to tell with him. He regarded me one more time and said,
"Good. We don't need more troublemakers. Too many questions, always snooping around. If you have any questions, try to figure it out yourself. This isn't the Ritz. We don't take care of everything for you. You're going to have to make do as is. Something really bad, like a fire, then you can call. But for minor shit, best to just figure it out yourself. Rent's due on the first, by the way. No exceptions, no grace period. Anyone who welches on their debt gets their asses kicked out next day. Fuck tenant laws, and you too if you wind up being a deadbeat."
He shot me another wicked smile and returned downstairs, leaving me with the keys and just assuming I had agreed to move in. I was dumbfounded by the combination of his upfront, hateful attitude and the subtext of certain things he had mentioned. What in his mind was a troublemaker? And what happened to those who asked too many questions? I couldn't believe I was going to have to live here. In a better position, I would have left immediately, but it was either here or homeless. All the other places I had looked at were too expensive. So I left and began packing my things. The whole situation was awful, but I had no choice but to move in. Moving day was as bleak as my mood. It had been raining on and off again all day and seemed to start heavily just in time to when I was moving my boxes. Almost as if to spite me, I started taking my stuff upstairs to my new room. As I was taking the first box up the stairs, I thought I heard a gunshot. I rushed on in, nervous tension, and as I was approaching my door, I heard a voice call out in a tone that was actually friendly.
"Excuse me, it looks like you dropped something."
I was surprised to see a woman standing in the hall with a look of friendly concern. Looking down, I saw I had indeed dropped something from the broken box I was trying to carry upstairs. I smiled at her and was a little embarrassed at my mistake, and she introduced herself.
"Hi, I'm Maxine. I'm your neighbor in 315.
I introduced myself and I was relieved to have found a friendly face for a change. "Hey there, I'm Greg. Nice to meet you." I held out my hand and she looked uncomfortable briefly and declined the handshake.
"Sorry, I'm getting over a cold. I shouldn't. But it's nice to meet you."
she said with another disarming smile. I was relieved to see someone who didn't look like they were minutes away from killing me or someone else. Though the paranoid part of my brain was begging the question why such a seemingly nice person was stuck here. I considered asking her, but figured it would be rude to pry about her situation. She might have been like me and just on hard times. I was embarrassed when I realized I was just standing there after saying hello and stumbled for words, but she spoke first.
Well, it was nice meeting you, Greg. Stay safe and try not to let your spirits get down. It's easy to get down in this place, but nothing bad lasts forever.
She smiled and waved goodbye. I looked down to make sure the box was secure, and when I looked up to say goodbye, she was already gone. I wondered how she was so fast. Nevertheless, I felt slightly more hopeful that things might be okay after all. Another hour of moving boxes and my knees were on fire, but the meager possessions I had were finally stuffed haphazardly into the tiny apartment. I was dead tired. But it was only 4 in the afternoon. I figured I had earned a nap, though, and went into the tiny closet that was supposedly a bedroom. No furniture fit besides my old mattress that took up the entirety of the space. I laid down and started drifting off. The peaceful sound of rain started to get heavier, and then I heard a new sound which woke me from my doze. A tiny dripping sound coming from the main room. I remembered what Mr. Jacobs had said about heavy rain and a leak, and I got up quickly to make sure the water was not landing on all my boxes and getting everything wet. I looked up in the corner of the room, and sure enough, there was a steady dripping onto one of the boxes below. I poked around and found the dish box and took out a few pieces of Tupperware and a bowl and set one underneath the leak. I thought for a moment about calling Mr. Jacobs, but then remembered how he had given up on fixing this leak and realized it would do no good. I turned around to go back to bed when I heard an odd tearing sound, like wallpaper being stretched to breaking point. When I turned around, there was nothing there. I figured it was just my nerves and went back to bed. I slept for about 2 hours, and despite the brief rest, I had a vivid nightmare of drowning in a dark lake with no shores on any side. It was horrible, just sinking into a black, watery abyss, but relaxed as I realized it was just a dream and no one likely heard or cared that someone in 316 was screaming anyway. I figured the rain and that damn leak had got me thinking about water, and my bad mood may have contributed to a nightmare. So I brushed it off and went about trying to organize the chaos of boxes in some logical manner for this small space. Later that night, I had a cup of ramen for dinner and turned in early. I read a bit before bed, almost as if trying to postpone sleep for fear of sinking into that fathomless abyss again when I slept. Eventually, I started to get comfortable and thought I may fall asleep when it started again. Drip, drip, drip. The leak had resumed. It sounded faster than before, and I thought it was strange that I could hear it so vividly. I got up to see if maybe it had overflowed or something, and I was not prepared for what I saw. The ceiling where the leak was had an old lambent light near the center, kind of like a black light. It seemed to be pulsing in time with the drops of water. There was an odd type of density in the air too, like it was too heavy and thick. It was maddeningly humid as well, despite the cold atmosphere of the room and outside. I was confused and kind of scared by the bizarre display. I just kept thinking to myself, it is only temporary. As soon as I can leave, I will. I can make it through anything short term. I took a step further into the living room and noticed a wet spot on the floor. There is no way it could be all the way over here. The bowl on the floor was not even full yet. I suspected a leak might also be over in this spot now. So I looked up and screamed out loud. There was what looked like a face pressing through the ceiling with drops of water seeping from the thing's mouth. I turned to run and tripped on the wet floor and toppled over, bashing my head into a wall and almost losing consciousness. I tried to stagger to my feet after getting knocked senseless, and the memory of the face reminded me of my peril. I got to my feet and looked up in tense expectation. There was nothing there. No leak, no face, no glowing, shifting portal. The only evidence of anything was a small wet spot on the ceiling about 9 inches across. At that point, I thought for sure that depression over my situation was causing me to go crazy and see things. I desperately wished I could be somewhere else just then, but it was late at night, and I needed sleep. I obviously couldn't afford a hotel, so I left my room and went outside to the parking lot to sleep in my car. Another week went by with poor work hours, barely any food, and bad sleep. Though one bright side was the surprisingly good weather. Days went by and no odd events took place in my apartment. It was a struggle, but at least with a little sunshine, there was no leak to conjure up such terrible nightmares like what I had experienced before. I ran into Maxine again on the way to the laundry room and couldn't help but ask if she knew of anything having happened in my room before I moved in. Like anyone having seen anything weird or the like. She shifted uncomfortably and looked down, pausing as if not wanting to answer.
I'm sorry, I don't know much. I hadn't been here very long when the last person in 316 had left. Well, I say left, but I heard there was an accident of some sort. There was a lot of commotion, and I had heard some strange rantings from the man before it happened.
She took a breath to steady herself after the stress of recounting the story and looked away.
I was away at work when it actually happened. Apparently, he had been found dead in the apartment. Some say he killed himself drowning. From what I heard, he was a bad man. There are a lot of bad men that live here. The things that have happened here that were never reported and the people that got hurt or worse, well...
She looked away sorrowfully for a moment and resumed.
Well, you wouldn't want to know. A coward like that would try and kill himself. But I think something akin to justice may have caught up to him. Something that this place might need more of. When you live with the stain of hate and violence, it leaves something behind. And perhaps, sometimes, the world finds a way to wash it away and right the wrongs. Anyway, I don't like to think about it. I have to run. Sorry I couldn't help more. I hope you stay safe and stay dry. You wouldn't want to get swept up too.
She turned a corner and I saw a fallen cardigan. I bent down to pick it up and it felt wet, like it had been washed already. Not too weird if she just did laundry, but her footprints were soaking wet as well. I grabbed the garment and rushed round the corner shouting out, "Hey, Maxine! You dropped this!" But she was gone. The wet footprints randomly stopped as well. How did she stop leaving them if her feet were wet? A few more months passed with no leaks and only a few nightmares. My luck turned sour again for different reasons, though. I suffered a severe back injury at work. Since it occurred while working, I got some workers' comp so I wouldn't lose all my income. I did have to take time off work, so I was forced to stay in my apartment all day and night recouping. To make matters worse, it was getting into the rainy season and the forecast was heavy rain for the next week. I was not quite bedridden, but walking and bending over was very uncomfortable. I considered taking a drive somewhere, just to get out of there. Unfortunately, I couldn't manage the stairs too often and I knew I at least needed to actually rest for one or two of my days off. So I was stuck in the apartment, watching the clouds gather and the skies darken. I placed several dishes under the leak spot in anticipation and swigged some energy drinks and coffee. I would rest. But I disliked the idea of sleeping any more than I had to, since I still feared those disturbing dreams in the water. I tried to distract myself by watching some old DVDs, since I had no streaming services to watch. I was shocked back into frenzied paranoia when the storm kicked up in intensity and knocked the power out. I tried not to panic and knew I had some candles or a flashlight or two somewhere. I would just have to get up though, so I figured I would stay in the bedroom. I used my phone flashlight to find a candle and matches and hurried back to the bedroom just as the leak restarted and the drip, drip, drip was heard, slowly filling the bowls. I felt silly fleeing the leak like it was dangerous. I didn't know why that dream had affected me so much, but it felt wrong. I sat in the dark and waited for the power to return, but it didn't. I fought sleep, but even in my paranoid state, I started to drift off. I was content that the door was closed, at least, and it slightly muffled the sound of that constant dripping. When I awoke to the sound of running water, the drip was replaced by a torrent that almost sounded like a waterfall. I was too afraid to move, but I had to see if my room was being flooded. I got up painfully and stepped down into ankle-high water. I knew this was a bad one, as I moved to the door to see what had happened. There was an odd sound on the other side, like a singular splashing noise, much like someone stepping through the water. My heart froze as I stopped, just short of opening the door, and focused on the sound. I heard the splashing again. It was definitely footsteps. I didn't know what to do. I tried to think who might break in. A robber? Maybe it was about the flooding. Maybe it was Mr. Jacobs after all. I grabbed the candlesticks and relit the candle. If I needed to, I might be able to use it as an improvised weapon. If it could be a murder weapon and clue, then why not? I cautiously opened the door and there was a backlash of even more water on the other side. It almost knocked me off my feet. I stumbled through the door, struggling in the cold water. It was impossible. But it felt like there was a current running through it. Like I was standing in the mouth of a river. I finally stepped past the door and into the living room and almost dropped the candle into the oddly surging waters. The sight before me was both amazing and terrifying. The water was moving. It was flowing into a whirlpool that was at the center of the room, but as it neared the center, it inverted and seemed to be spiraling out from the ceiling rather than the pooled water on the floor, in a sight that blatantly disregarded all laws of gravity. The spectacle was so amazing I almost forgot the footsteps I had heard. Until they resumed, my distraction ended, and I saw large bursts of water splashing toward me. I heard an ear-splitting cry like the wail of a banshee, and suddenly the ceiling where the leak was coming from and the current epicenter of the vortex started to glow. After a moment, it turned deep red and a new horror occurred. The face I had seen before, and what I had hoped was a nightmare before, was back. The ceiling seemed to shimmer now, almost translucent, and I saw the horrible features of a hideous form. White, pupilless eyes stared down at me, and a gaping, screaming maw began filling with reddish water. It thickened, and to my horror, I realized it was no longer water. It was blood. The vortex began spewing blood all across the room, and as I turned to flee in terror, I was wrenched from my feet by some unseen force in the water and dragged, kicking and screaming, into the heart of the vortex. My last conscious sight that night was being pulled up into my own ceiling and into the bleeding maw of that avatar of bloody nightmare. I woke up in the black abyss. The water was still mixed with blood, but there were no creatures. I was somehow buoyant and floated along in the shoreless sanguine ocean. I drifted along, unable to sink or to fully rise up. After what felt like an hour of drifting, I heard splashing, and all of a sudden, the sound got louder and louder. I looked around and saw the source of the noise. Bodies falling from the sky into the bloody ocean. First a few, then dozens, then hundreds. A literal storm of blood-soaked, featureless bodies came crashing into the water. I tried to evade them, but I could not dodge them all, and I was buffeted by the limp forms of countless bodies until I was pummeled below the surface of the water. I couldn't breathe, and as I tried to surface, one of the bodies grasped my wrist and opened its eyes. On its previously featureless face,
It now had oddly pulsating white pupils, and it burst what appeared to be stitching on its own mouth in order to scream under the water. The sight and shock of that horrible scene woke me, and I realized I was laying on my back in my apartment again. The flood water was lapping at my face, and I was breathing in and choking on the water on the floor. I lurched up as soon as I regained control of my body, spitting water and gagging from the quasi-drowning I had endured. The water looked normal. No blood from what I saw, but the water itself was not a delusion or some trace of insanity. It was a bad scene. Tons of my things were submerged, and the water damage was extensive. Somehow it had risen almost 2 feet high. I had to do something. I didn't expect much from this place, but this was a severe enough situation that the crotchety old bastard Mr. Jacobs was going to have to fix something whether he liked it or not, or they would be getting a lawsuit in short order. I figured lawyers would take easy cases they knew they would win with no retainer needed if they got paid more at the end, so it would not be a bluff. I was dead serious. I almost drowned in my apartment! I staggered to the door and managed to open it, draining tons of water out into the hall. But I didn't care. I just needed some fresh air. My back was on fire, but nothing would stop me. I heard a friendly voice calling out to me. It was Maxine.
Hey, are you okay? I saw all the water and I hadn't seen you around. Is there flooding in there?
She asked with an odd look, almost like she knew the answer but didn't want to let on. Yes, there is. It is pretty bad, actually. I was just about to call Mr. Jacobs to do something about it.
Greg.
She paused for a moment and then continued.
You didn't see anything in there, did you? In the water, like something or someone familiar?
I was confused by the specific nature of the question. I was put off and unsure how she knew I might have seen something. I am not sure what I saw. Why do you ask? I responded.
No reason. Just be careful. It can be dangerous if you do. Don't worry if it's not where you belong. You won't get pulled in forever. Just be careful, though. You don't want to risk it.
A flash of morbid glee was evident on her face for a split second, and then it was gone. I was starting to feel uncomfortable. Pulled in? How do you know about the leak? And if you do, what's behind it? I shot back with mounting frustration.
You know, Greg, in many cultures, the path between the world of the living and the dead is separated by only the slightest barrier, often a literal or symbolic body of water, whether the river Styx or the lake of fire or the waters reflected at the feet of the Torii Gate. It's often just potent waters. Like all bodies of water, when they are contained somewhere, there can be leaks. Sometimes the water is not the only thing that seeps out.
She stopped speaking for a moment and fixed me with an intense stare that made me feel very strange. I did not know what she was talking about. Was she saying that the portal leads to some kind of afterlife? Like heaven, or more likely in this case, hell? Did you just say... And she cuts me off, saying...
Oh, if Mr. Jacobs... goes over there to fix your ceiling. Let him know I had a concern I needed to express to him as well. It's been waiting for a long time.
She smiled again in a creepy way that disturbed me. Yeah, sure. I guess I can do that.
Thanks. See you later. And I hope you feel better. Those accidents can be rough. Best to sleep on your side and to drink lots of water. The right kind, though.
She winked at me and departed. And I was at a loss for what just happened. How did she know I had gotten hurt? I didn't tell her. And what was that thing about the right kind of water? My anxiety about the situation was increasing, and I was weirded out by Maxine's questions too. Maybe she was not so sweet and trustworthy after all. After far too long being ignored and dealing with the first sodden, now moldering clothes boxes and other personal effects, Mr. Jacobs finally scheduled a time to drain the last remnants of water and do something more concrete about fixing the leak. I was waiting patiently for his arrival, and there was a loud banging at the door. I greeted Mr. Jacobs, and he grunted at me, and without looking at me, walked past and looked up at the hole in the ceiling. He had an odd air of what almost looked like fear or concern on his face. After he walked in, another large person in overalls and holding a toolbox did as well. There was a large tarp or something that seemed odd to bring to this sort of job. It looked like a big sort of bag. They were both looking at the hole in the ceiling, and Mr. Jacobs turned on a dime and stared me down.
It's just been water leaking down, nothing else, right?
I thought the question was odd, and I hesitated to answer since I was thinking of those vivid nightmares. I think he may have noticed that because his face sank, and he glowered at me looking significantly angrier and more dangerous than before. Before I could answer, he shouted at me.
What did you see? Did something come out of the hole? Was it a person?
He looked manic and deranged. And I looked at the other man in the coveralls and he looked silent, holding a sledgehammer that had appeared in his hand and watching the confrontation unfold.
I don't know. I just saw the leak. What is going on? What do you think I saw?
My neighbor asked me the same thing earlier. Mr. Jacobs' eyes narrowed.
What neighbor? Haven't had tenants in 315 or 317 in over a year.
I was confused. Maybe I had heard Maxine's apartment number wrong. But how could she be my neighbor if she was not in one of those? This must be some kind of mix-up, I figured. My neighbor Maxine said she lives in 315. I just saw her the other day and she asked if I had seen something as well. At the mention of the name, Mr. Jacobs' face turned white.
You said her name was Maxine? She said that? You saw her?
He was screaming at me, asking more questions about Maxine like she was on America's Most Wanted. What does she have to do with this?
I don't know what the hell is going on, I admitted.
Ignoring my question, Mr. Jacobs began pacing and holding his hand to his head. The man in overalls spoke for the first time.
Jack, we have to go. Let's find the body while the leak and the other side are still here, and dispose of the loose end.
I gasped at the admission of both a body and that I was apparently a loose end to some sort of crime.
I fucking know, all right? Make it quick. We're going to have to do two, so let's go before more people start coming home and we risk someone hearing.
I fell back against the wall in shock as the large man hefted the sledgehammer and started stomping toward me. I was unarmed and injured. I didn't know what I could do, but suddenly the lights went out again. The door slammed shut, and as the three of us stood there in stunned silence, a slow drip began to trickle from the ceiling, each drop splashing off of the low standing pool of water. The large man went to open the door and tried to open it, but to no avail.
Jack, what's going on?
The man shouted to Mr. Jacobs.
I don't know. Just use a hammer. Kill him, and then bust us out of here. Or just give it to me and I'll fucking do it.
They were going to kill me? I had to think of something quick, so I stammered out. Wait! I don't know what is going on, you guys. You don't want to kill me. I really don't know anything. Let's just get out of here before the water gets much worse. I think something bad is going to happen.
As if on cue, the dripping stopped and a torrent of water was disgorged from the hole in the ceiling, which now held an eerie, lambent glow and was pouring a blood-red liquid into the apartment. There was a giggle followed by a blood-curdling screech, and the man in the coveralls with the hammer was wrenched up off his feet and dragged kicking and screaming into the water. Mr. Jacobs and I both watched as his entire head was forced under the water by some unseen force. The man was being drowned, and as he looked like he might kick up, a splash of water landed next to him, revealing a brief outline of a female form. The eyes were white, and it had a horrible smile on its face. Its long clawed hand was wrapped fully around the man's throat and was effortlessly throttling him. Mr. Jacobs started sobbing, begging for mercy.
I didn't mean to. I didn't. It was an accident. I would have been locked up. I couldn't lose everything. I had to.
I sat in stark terror as the falling water from the ceiling became a storm. The millions of droplets highlighted the attacker. Her form was terrible, yet oddly beautiful as she strolled along towards Mr. Jacobs, who was grasping at the door handle and tugging uselessly at it. He reached for the hammer when he was pulled toward the figure by a moving tendril of bloody water.
Just a little bath, Jack. That's all. It won't hurt. Much.
He tried to scream, but his head was submerged in the bloody water. I saw the sentient waves of ruinous water grasp each of his appendages and tear him limb from limb in a bloody explosion. I screamed and stumbled away, wading through the water into my bedroom, and desperately pulled on the window to escape that way. I heard splashing footsteps and a soft, pretty tune being sung by the ethereal voice. Then I heard a giant crash and saw a portion of the wall collapse along with more of the ceiling, and the sight before my eyes almost drove me insane. There was a vortex of bloody water sucking the maimed bodies of those men into the hellish portal where the leak originated, and at the center was the bloody figure smiling at me and waving a hand as I finally got the window to budge and fell out. I stepped outside and tried to descend the fire escape, but the surface was too slippery and I fell. I screamed and plummeted down and thought I would land on my head and die. Yet as I fell, my descent slowed, and to my shock and horror, I realized the rainwater was mixing with the water from my apartment flowing out of the window, and I was being pulled back up into my room. I tried to scream, but I felt water fill my mouth. At some point in the nightmare ride, I blacked out again. That was the last thing I remember before I found myself here again. As I listened to the leak once more, I wonder if it could have all been a bad dream. The water, the leak, the portal, it is all too much. It couldn't have been real. I will go into my dingy living room and see the water dripping into the bowl and realize it was all just a terrible dream. Yet when I sit up, I notice an odd breeze, and when my eyes focus in the dark, I see lights in the sky. The sky? The ceiling is gone! I don't know what is going on, but I know I have to get out now. I hear splashing footsteps again over the ever-present dripping, and I see in the sky now the light of the monstrous portal opening in the very clouds above. It is too much. I leap from the fire escape again. Somehow in my mad haste, I survive descending the fire escape. And I sit here now writing this impossible story in my car that I have been living in nearly a week after the fact. I heard on the news reports of a structural collapse at my apartment and the landlord being unavailable for questioning, presumed missing along with another man who worked at the apartment as a special contractor. I thought about Mr. Jacobs and the man in the coveralls and shuddered when I remembered them being drawn into that unholy portal in the ceiling. Apparently, it had not been the only disappearance in that building either. Around a year ago, there was a missing persons report from Maxine Valeroso. I remembered how Jacobs reacted to her name, and it made me wonder what really happened here before I moved in. I don't know who or what Maxine was. Maybe she was the same person in the report. Changed somehow. Mr. Jacobs must have known something about her disappearance. He had likely killed her himself based on the implication of his pleading to the terrible specter of his victim, Maxine. Maxine. Somehow, she came back for revenge. She had mentioned the water washing away people's violent lives, and I shudder when I consider her smile when talking about the last person in 316 and the overdue message she had to send to Mr. Jacobs. I don't know if she was a ghost, a demon, or what. I also don't know the extent of her reach or if she is satisfied with just those men. Who knows how many others she may have washed away from that room with that dread portal. I suppose it doesn't matter anymore. I am never going back there. I gave all my belongings up for lost, and the building was condemned anyway after the landlord disappeared and the ceiling collapsed in several sections of the building. I think there are terrible things they will discover if they ever really investigate the building. Perhaps they will find bodies. Perhaps the bodies are all gone, sucked into that watery abyss. That eldritch gate to hell that opened up with a simple leak. If something like that can happen, I just don't know. I don't know if anyone is safe anymore.
I hope you enjoyed The Leak in Room 316, as written by Red Bad Andy, and performed by Chilling Tales for Dark Knights newcomer Matthew Farugia, Heather Ordover, Jeff Sturdivant, and myself, Paul J. McSorley. Our second tale of the evening is written by Mark Taus and performed by myself, Paul J. McSorley. In it, when a man awakes to an empty field in chilling silence, he realizes that his world is unraveling. Racing against an unexplainable dread, he searches for his vanished family, plunging only further into physical and mental darkness. Now, without further ado, I present to you A Starless Night Sky. The music from my phone stops feeding through the car stereo. Distant voices fade to nothing. With an overwhelming feeling that something is off, I snap my eyes open and sit bolt upright. Dread crushes my chest. The field is empty. In darkness, half a dozen footballs scattered across the pitch. Josie? Ben? My skin tightens. I reach for the phone. The screen flickers. No signal. Perhaps 60 kids were on that pitch, not to mention the parents and coaches. And Josie? She was leaning against the car, talking to a couple of the other mums. The hell is this? The harsh linear lines of the dashboard clock tell me it's still 6:59. I close my eyes for what? A few seconds? This can't be real. It can't be happening. A prank? A dream? Listen to yourself, Liam. Focus. Deafening silence fuels my unease. Never really knew what that meant before. Shifting in my seat, I scan the grounds. Cars are empty. No signs of life. It's as if everyone just vanished into thin air. There's just no way. I throw the door open, devouring a mouthful of oppressively still air. Josie! Ben! My chest constricts. Josie! Absolute quiet becomes even more noticeable, an uncomfortable and oppressive silence, both alien and terrifying. No traffic, no dogs barking, no birds singing. Even the breeze appears to be on hiatus, and with it, the sound of the trees. Ben! My voice is pure, undistorted, and loaded with fear. Walking with urgency towards the field, I note the landscape, untouched by light aside from the weak glow of the fading sun. Ben! I increase my pace, my chest feeling like it might implode. Josie! The unlit floodlights that once blinded me appear alien as they tower into the night sky, big, dull eyes bearing down on me unsympathetically. Can anyone hear me? Pin drop silence. With no plan in mind, I sprint back to the car. I just want my family back. I turn the key. Against expectations, the engine starts. A shudder rattles through me. The remaining daylight continues to fade. Come on, come on! Gravel crunches under the tires, yet it feels like I'm floating. The high beam lights up the exit sign ahead. Still surprised that anything works in this suddenly dead world, I wheel skid onto the road. Knuckles white, my teeth buried into my lip. A thousand theories rush through my mind, none of them plausible. This is the real world. No surprises. My phone still shows no signal. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. But the useless mantra does nothing. I swallow lava, another wave of dread immediately exploding in my chest. Inhale, exhale. At the crossroads, I bring the car to a halt. It's just after 7. This road should be humming. Not a single moving vehicle, or even the rustle of a tree. More evil silence greets me as I wind the window down. Streetlights offer no assistance, their presence merely mocking. Fuck! Feels like my skin is crushing my bones as I pull away. Calm down, Liam. Breathe. Dead in the ditch, you'll be no good to anyone. The cold hiss of static fills the car as I flick on the radio. Better than nothing. Where are you? Where is everyone? Just saying those words out loud shreds my nerves. Things only get worse as I turn onto the main road. Not a morsel of light emanates from the stores or apartments. Even the 24-hour supermarket bathes in darkness. What the hell? What the hell? Against all instincts, I slow down, praying for the sight of another living soul. I long to hear a wheel skid, music, a voice, anything. Self-doubt and paranoia claw at my brain. But that field was empty, and this silence that persists is unbearable. Never have I yearned so much for the comfort of home, the familiarity of normalcy, tears that sneak up on me. I feel stupid, helpless. Guilt takes a shot, twisting at my insides. I'll be better, Josie. You'll see. Just come back to me, please. Where are you? Where are you? Unlit streets, dark, lifeless houses. People cannot simply disappear. Throwing caution out of the window, I push my foot down. 5 minutes and I should be home. Faces flash in front of me. Their smiles, their frowns. One of the recent exchanges with Mary. Working late again? Tell them to go to hell, Liam. You have a family, for Christ's sake. Dread wins as I begin to wonder what to expect. Part of me is even reluctant to pull down my street in case... well, in case. The petrol station on the left. Deserted. Dead. Please, please, please. More ridiculous theories fight it out in my head. Aliens? Apocalypse? Yeah, that's right, Liam. You're the special one. The chosen one. For Christ's sake, get a grip. The pills, perhaps? I have been upping my... no, it doesn't add up. This is all too real. Come back to me, Josie. Come back to me. The sign for our street usually brings comfort. Tonight, it gives me nothing but anxiety. Stabbing pains ignite across my chest, guilt continuing to gnaw. The one time I come and watch the kid play a soccer game, I don't even get out of the car. Exhausted, full of excuses and moans. Don't feel so good, hun. Think I ate something. Preparing myself for the worst, I turn into the street. Like a sucker punch, sadness knocks out precious breath. Cold, unlit, desolate. No longer a home. Just a house among houses. Bricks and mortar. Glass and steel. A lifeless advertisement of what once was. I slam on the brakes, open the door, and heave myself from the car. Josie! My chest feels like it's ripping in two, anxiety and grief attacking from the inside. Gravel crunches underfoot as I stagger down the path. Halfway down, the house lights flicker on. Hope surges, but just as quickly, darkness falls. Pain bites hard across my chest, dropping me to my knees. I'm home, Josie. I'm home. I reach for the door. Lights flicker again. Pain swells. Instinctively, I draw my hands to my chest. Josie, are you in there? Another flicker. This time, my chest ignites. I fall to my back, grimacing as my head bounces. Where's the moon? I didn't notice before, but why can't I see the fucking moon? Josie! Ben! Need to make it to... Agony rides through me. The taste of metal fills my mouth. House lights flicker on, off, on, off. The world begins to fade, dull colors washing away. Josie! If I can just make it over the threshold. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Writhing across the gravel, I finally make it to the door. I'll do better. I promise. As I reach for the handle, the door opens, the lights within burning with such brilliance they almost blind me. Pain snatches my remaining breath. I'm falling, sinking into the hallway carpet. Half in, half out, I turn onto my back to see a starless sky looming above. Its vastness intimidating, terrifying, threatening. Distant, throaty, desolate. Josie's voice floats down the stairs. Liam? I try to respond, but my chest feels as though it is caving in. Lights flicker off, on, off, on, off. A voice once again breaks the silence. Try again, please. It all becomes clear. Half in, half out. I love you, Josie. I love you, Ben. Another voice, distorted, distant. We're losing him. Small surges of pain pulse through my bones, but they're nothing like the ripples that tore through me before. And aside from the weakening beams of the car's headlights, this monochrome world is in complete darkness. Walls crumble. The ceiling cracks. Sunlight dies. A million regrets flood my mind. the starless sky falls. I hope you enjoyed A Starless Night Sky, as written by Mark Taus and performed by Paul J. McSorley. Mark Taus is an English horror writer living in Australia. He would sell his soul to the devil or anyone buying if it meant he could write full-time. Alas, he left it very late to begin this journey, penning his first story since primary school at the ripe old age of 45. Want your business to be part of our show? Contact Natalie at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com. You all came together beautifully when we were in need, and now we want to give back. For a limited time, we are offering our services, platform, and talents to write about your business. Specialize in spooky merch? Do you make teas, have a house cleaning business, or just opened an extermination service? Hit us up. We would love to share your company with our listeners while also curating a special tale for your business that will live on forever in your hearts, minds, souls, and maybe even a dark corner of your closet. Just a tiny one. We won't take up too much room. Well, friends, our weekly descent into the depths has just about come to a close. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us tonight and remind you to take a moment to stop by our iTunes page and leave Chilling Tales for Dark Nights a 5-star review and a kind word. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram if you haven't already. Also, don't forget, we have our own book out. Since 2012, Chilling Tales for Dark Nights has been keeping people awake through the night with terrifying audio renditions of tales from the darkest minds modern memory has to offer. Now, in this first of 3 volumes, collected are 30 tales never before available by some of the most prolific and talented authors of the online community, each one accompanied by a suitably grim illustration by David Romero. Strange cats, body mutilations, demonic apartments, revenge from beyond the grave, and yes, even a man-eating monster or two. All of these and more beckon you further into the darkness. Turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Who needs sleep anyway? Check it out at Amazon today or by going to chillingbook.com. On to the shows. Longtime resident Otis Jiry has his very own show here on our network, Scary Stories Told in the Dark, which you can hear every Sunday night. We also have Eric Peabody's Horror Hill, a podcast dedicated to some of our deeper and darker tales. We hope you check him out. And Drew Blood's Dark Tales airs Fridays, featuring some Southern down-home horror. And don't forget to check out the Fear from the Heartland archives, featuring more than 120 episodes. Well, friends, our weekly descent into the depths has just about come to a close. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us tonight and remind you to take a moment to stop by our iTunes page and leave Chilling Tales for Dark Nights a 5-star review and a kind word. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram if you haven't already. And of course, subscribe to us on YouTube, where you can find an archive of our work going back to 2012. And consider signing up as a patron at our website, ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, to show your support and get all of our content ad-free. I'm your host of the evening, Paul J. McSorley, and it's been a pleasure. Tune in again next week when we once again turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams.